All right, our next presenter, who is going to be fascinating, is Pauline Lubens. Pauline has a master's in public health and is a doctoral candidate, and she has also been a journalist. She graduated from Johns Hopkins in public health, and she's been covering wars toll motivated her to concentrate on its public health impact. And she's going to give us a kick butt performance.
So if I'm not fascinating, you can talk to Anne later. I don't know that I'll be fascinating. Every time I hear other people talk, I have want to throw out my talk and start over. But I think my invitation here was I was on a conference call with the Peace Caucus, and Vic Seidel, who some of you, I'm sure most of you know, was on that call, and someone was talking about veterans' health care and barriers for veterans, and I said, what about military families? And I think that's why I was invited, because I think that's something that's really left out of the equation. And my on-the-ground work as a journalist is partly what informed that, because nearly every story I tried to do as a journalist, and I'm going to focus on these three, and then towards the end I'm going to show you some video clips from these projects I did. Every story I did, I thought, okay, this is about an individual. And it's really not. It's really much more, especially the first one, was much more about the effects on family. And so Frank Sandoval was the, so let me back up a little bit. Why did I decide to go into public health? Because at some point, if I could live my life over, I would live it like Anne has, which is I would have been much more actively engaged in topics I had a real passion for, that journalism really doesn't allow you to do that. And then once you start seeing things like war up close and personal, you develop an even more of a passion for it. So this is how my focus on my decision to get the MPH and to focus on the effects of war all came together. And I will tell you that when I first told people this, whether they were in academics or not, I'd say the public health impact of war, and they'd go, what? Public health? War? Public? Oh, yeah, I guess it does have a public health impact. So it made me feel even stronger about the importance of this. So I'm going to try to stay focused here because Anne's got the timer on. So Frank Sandoval was, I had been to Iraq twice, mostly focusing on the effect of the war on civilians. Came back, noticed as a journalist or as someone who'd been there that there was this incredible public disconnect about the war. There's a war on? Really? Oh yeah, I forgot, there's a war. Especially in Silicon Valley, where on the one hand there's, I was working in San Jose, there's a political engagement about the war, but there's not a personal engagement. The VA in Palo Alto is located, I don't know, are any of you from the Bay Area, do you know about the VA in Palo Alto? So it's probably a mile from ground zero of this venture capital where people were making 6-7 figures. And me, I didn't even know there was a VA in Palo Alto till then. And so meanwhile, down the road, literally, are these people, you know, struggling with their injuries that they had sustained in the war. So I really wanted to bring the war into people's homes who otherwise could shut the door to it. So I approached the VA about doing a documentary project on one soldier's recovery from the war. And as you might imagine, there was a lot of resistance to this at first. Part of it was the PR person there really is very just, she's protective of the soldiers, didn't want them to be exploited. Actually, I've learned at this point to say soldiers, Marines, and airmen, and it's not all soldiers, but anyway. So eventually I established some trust, the kind of trust that eventually becomes valuable if you're trying to do research also. And I met Sergeant Frank Sandoval, was injured by an IED, suffered a traumatic brain injury in Iraq, was brought into the Palo Alto VA, and I followed him for 9 months. And he had this 21-year-old wife who had married this big, husky military guy who was going to take care of her. And suddenly she was his caregiver. And the stress on her was clearly enormous. There was this change in roles of who took care of who. They had a 5-year-old daughter who was clearly, they were from Arizona, so the daughter was kept away more often than not. But, you know, she was 5. This is a very important stage of development. This clearly was having effects on her and still has. Frank was also the only person on the unit at the time whose wife had not left him. So we also know the importance of the effects on family, but the effect of family support on the healing of the patient. So this is, you know, my first exposure to why, what the role of family really was going to be. Then there was another gentleman, Stephen Edwards, Iraq War vet, came home with very bad PTSD, and in talking to me, talked a lot about the community disconnect, you know, literally being places and feeling like people just didn't understand what he'd gone through or were even interested. Though we had occasional stories of heroic, he had a breakdown in a grocery store, and the people in the grocery store, once they figured out what the problem was, were very helpful to him. He talked to me a lot about his search for institutional support and the need for social networks, and the fact that even with his PTSD, if he could go back to the war zone, he would go back in a heartbeat because his unit members were the people who he had the most in common with and that he could relate to. So when we say people re-up even though there's a war on, that's a big part of, from what I could tell, the reason for people doing that. Then there's a VA chaplain, ironically, whose only son committed suicide in Iraq. Took her 2 years to be willing to talk publicly, partly her own emotions, partly there's this huge stigma to suicide. And eventually she was encouraged to do this by, there's a Major General, Mark Graham, in the U.S. Army, whose son committed suicide. His son was in the ROTC, but he was planning to deploy, and then his other son was killed in theater in Iraq. So he encouraged Sue to talk publicly. She then finally got back to me and said, I'm ready to talk publicly. So you'll see, I'm going to show a little bit of the video. She talks about the failure of his commanders to deal with his suicide ideation, to deal with any sort of suicide prevention, and as she talks about the stigma for her, you know, she's meeting with other Gold Star families, and she's like, do I tell them my son committed suicide? They're all talking about their kids as a hero. Is he a hero? And so this was another way in which it really was affecting a family. And then one other thing, I hope I'm not running out of time, but I'm okay, so, because I got to show the videos, but anyway, the other thing I noticed just in general covering military families, the first time I noticed it, I went to a meeting of Blue Star families. You guys all know what Blue Star families are. Okay, so I was actually looking for a family that I could follow through the war, through a deployment. So I wanted to go meet people. There's this mistrust pretty much everybody has of anybody that's a journalist. So this was partly trust building, partly informative. It was a Friday night, Saturday night. It was a weekend night in San Jose, and you know, outside, people are downtown, kids are going to bars, and there's this bubble. I go inside this building, and I immediately was like, wow, these people really literally live in their own world. And there's a bubble that really set them apart from the community. And I tried to describe this to my friends, and I really sort of felt like the outlier, but the more I covered these stories, the more I felt like part of that bubble. And I don't come from a military family. I'm like, I want a hippie wannabe. I mean, I'm almost old enough to be a hippie, not quite. So I never imagined that I would become so engaged in military issues. And so my question is, even when I hear people speak about veteran health care and the effects of the war, I so rarely hear talk about families. And so I'm concerned now when people talk about, oh, we're ending the war, we can save all this money. You know, someone said they're going to save trillions of dollars if the wars are ending, and I'm like, set aside at least a trillion of that for the aftermath of the war, because I feel like the battle's just beginning, and it's not just for the people who serve in the war. Of course, their issues are very important, and I'm interested in those issues as well, but I'm actually really interested in what I call the transgenerational effect on their children and the effect on their spouses. And so we know, and this is in large part caused by the three major differences of the current wars. The multiple deployments, it's an all-volunteer force, so that's partly where the public disconnect comes from. There's a figure people throw around, it's like the war's being fought like by 1% or 2% of the population, and that's who's really personally affected by it. Though, if you factor in healthcare workers, if you factor in people who have to perform the funerals, if you factor in the people who teach the kids who are having behavioral issues, the problem spreads further than that. And so these are some of the public health impacts that I identify in a framework. I've been teaching a course on war and public health, and you know these are all involved. These are all part of how it affects public health. And the one thing I found when I went to the VA was that, oh, I went the wrong way. One thing I found when I went to the VA is that most of the people that I saw there that were injured had been injured in car accidents. And for a long time, I was told, I don't know if this is still true, that that's the most major way that people are injured once they get home from the war is car accidents. It's either because of PTSD, TBI, or they're used to, you know, I drove in Iraq for a while. I mean, you get to drive over median strips and nobody cares, and you don't have to stop at stoplights. So it's a combination of things. So these figures are old, but it gives you a sense of, you know, if mental health is exacerbated by multiple deployments, it's a lot of multiple deployments. And these, this is just the visible traumatic brain injuries. This is, so this is, and you know, traumatic brain injury meaning that not just that there's PTSD that accompanies it, but there's long-term care that possibly accompanies it. A guy like Frank that I did the story on was going to need long-term care the rest of his life because he was never going to recover completely. Getting really quickly to children. So about 2 million children have been affected by unemployment. 56.4% of active duty troops are married, so they're spouses. That doesn't even include the reservist figures. This is just really quickly a chart. So we can see that these are developmental ages that are going to affect. These are all, you know, think about it. The war, 10 years, there are kids who are 10, there are kids who are 5, their entire lives, one parent or if not both parents have deployed and redeployed and separated and come back. So this just, again, shows you some of the demographics of the children of reservists and active duty. And so these are some of the stressors that have been identified, whether they live in a civilian community. I don't have to read this to you guys, you can read it. But there's a lot of research finally being done on the effects on children of the deployed troops. You know, all of these are, again, things, these are topics I feel like are neglected when people talk about the effects, the health effects of the war. How much time do I have? Okay, so I'm going to hurry up because I want to show these videos. People have found a correlation between the length of deployment, that the multiple deployments increase the increased behavior. There's a cumulative effect on kids, not to mention the fact that we know that children's mental health is affected by the mental health of their parents. And so there's this reciprocal, and we don't even know what the effect is going to be now that people are coming home and the reintegration process. There's been research done on what it's like when the parent is gone, but what is it like when they come home and the person comes home with mental health problems, and how does that affect the child? So it's a huge family community issue that I'm not sure I feel is being addressed in a way that reflects the true cost of the wars. These are some of the other these are some other studies that have been done. Most of these are fairly recent, so there's fine. When I applied to grad school, I couldn't find any published papers on the effects on children and families, and that was about 2009. Now maybe I've got better at searching. I don't know, or maybe they just were finally being done. And then we know that there's the effects on spouses has been enormous. Some of the anxiety, you know, subsides when people come home. So there's exposure and duration that is more limited. But now that people are coming home, we know that there's links to domestic violence. We know that there's links to the mental health of spouses. And Time Magazine had this. Okay, I better hurry. Time Magazine, I thought, had this very good cover story about an army apart. And I think this is a big part of the problem. This is the disconnect. And they also talked about the stigma of being in the military and people thinking of them as victims. And I think the unemployment rates also reflect, you know, it's great that there's a lot of publicity being given to PTSD and mental health effects of the war, but there's a stigma to that, too, that is clearly contributing to the unemployment. Okay, so... Oop, I'm going the wrong way, sorry. So I'm going to show you a few videos. I'm going to show you, this was a 30-minute documentary, but I brought it, it's not 30 minutes now. Okay, it's about 3 minutes. So it just gives you a sense of, you'll see the role of his wife, if I can find the, go back up. Okay, where's the, okay. I'm a Mac person, I hate PCs. Okay, so this is, I'm going to just show, this is the one on Frank. It's 3 minutes versus about 35 minutes. I think I'm going to show it. Okay.
He apologizes a lot. My cousins do not apologize to me. They go, Frankie, are you going to get better? And he stays quiet, and they go, are you going to get better? And he asks me, yeah. I'm like, okay, then don't apologize. When they told us that the whole rundown of everything, he won't be able to communicate with us, there's a big chance he's not going to be able to see. He's going to be paralyzed on his left side. He'll never walk again. All this stuff that went in one ear and out the other, really.
I know. I don't, you know, me doing this with anybody else, I don't, it even think it's the same thing. That, you know, he's like that. I'm going to do this with him, so it makes it a lot easier.
It's a different kind of bond, though, yeah. Not just as husband and wife, best friend, partner, everything. It's made more of a definition of a relationship.
I have to keep being here for Frankie. I can't, you know, just let go. If I give up, then Frankie has the opportunity to give up.
I get upset with him because I know he can do everything that they're asking him to do.
If you're so tired, then we can go off to dinner then.
He's not wanting to give up, so I can't just let him cry and get frustrated and not want to do anything anymore. So I try to be his little motivator right there. I'm okay, Frank, you know. Do you want me to give up? Do you want me not to be here anymore? Do you want me just to say no, I don't want to do this? And of course he doesn't say no, he doesn't want me to do that. So I'm like, okay, then, you know, you just got to keep thinking like that too.
School's meant for us. I've made it this far. We've made it this far. School's already planned for us to go through way before we were even here.
You could have done this without her, huh? How does she help you? She gives you strength,
I was going to show two other videos, but I don't have time. So if I talk about the depth of how this affects families, so the end of this story is that Frank went home to Yuma. He was, you know, going to be, he was going to live, you know, he wasn't going to live the life he had. Frank came back for routine surgery to have the bone flap replaced, and he died. His brain swelled during surgery. And so at the end, his wife was like, what was this all about? What was this for? I stuck by him. So that the effects on her are forever. The effects on the VA staff was devastated. A colleague of mine who worked with me on this story summed it up when he looked at, you know, he went to Frank's grave after the funeral and said, wow, what a waste. And Frank would probably not have said that. Frank was, you know, motivated. He volunteered after 9/11. He was very patriotic. In fact, the first time he stood up during his rehab was they were playing the Star Spangled Banner. There was a ceremony he was at. Frank stood up on his own. He had never stood up, and he stood up. And so Frank probably wouldn't have thought it was a waste. But I guess my point of this one is that what I realized in doing a lot of this work is that if you think about the exponential effect of the war on families, and if you think about community health and public health, it's huge. Sometimes I get overwhelmed now that I'm a doctoral student. I'm like, I don't even know which topic I want to focus on because it's all part of the effect of the war. And even now, I feel like I'm losing the ground level view because now I'm a doctoral student and I'm on campus at UC Irvine, and you know, it's all about taking my epi class and deciding what my dissertation is going to be because I'm 57 years old, and if I don't do my dissertation soon, the most I can do is have a doctor title and my obit. So I was teaching a course at UC Irvine on war and public health, and the thing that still keeps me grounded is two things. I've been working with a women's veterans organization that's based in San Diego, and these are women who, some of whom served, some of whom didn't, but the mental health effect and the rage is so apparent in the room when they meet that this is another issue that now I'm also wanting to focus on. And I'll just say one more thing. I had panel discussions in my undergraduate course. And, you know, even when I was in journalism, you know, I was always reluctant, you know, will they really want to come tell their stories, you know, and I was always, like, relieved when they said yes. I invited veterans who had served from the community who had served in the war, some were still active duty, to speak, and they were really grateful that anybody was even interested. And then one more barrier to care, and this is really important, I think, too. One of the groups I invited, we had a little prep beforehand. I was citing the rates of PTSD, and there's like, it was how not to do a panel discussion. It was all people from the same unit and their commanding officer. Okay, so the commanding officer, when I get done citing the rates of PTSD, said, "Really? I hadn't heard there was any PTSD." And so this is a huge barrier to care. And so what I learned from all of this is, and you guys know this, the war is over. If the war is over, the battle is just starting. So thank you. And okay, Anne's.
Sorry, this is APHA. We never have enough time for anything. A couple of things came up for me during that talk. One is that you will see very different statistics from all of us. And the very different statistics that you will see don't mean anything. I know we're all APHA. We all do statistics. The point is it's way too damn many. Okay? That's the important number. Way too damn many, and I'm being polite. The other thing that comes up from that talk is, what is the coverage for these families as far as their insurance? And that's something to think about. I won't even go into it. And the last thing is that adult children of people who, of parents who were deployed when they were younger, are now coming up as adults with major mental health problems and major disconnects, especially in relationship building. And now we will have a really important presentation from Johanna Buelda, who is amazing, and you read her biography. Actually, I think I'm going to let her tell you about herself. She has all kinds of alphabet soup, and she'll tell you all about that. But she is currently working, among other places, with Vietnam Veterans Against the War. She has a private practice. This woman takes care of more veterans in a week than almost anybody, and she has stepped into the breach with people who have bad conduct, bad discharges, and that's one of the things she'll be talking about, huge barrier to care.
Good morning. I just wanted to first ask if there's any veterans in this room. Would you stand up, please? So I wanted to thank you for coming today, and I wanted to acknowledge that you're here and listening to us non-veterans, except for Steve. Are there any spouses or partners of veterans in this room? Can you keep standing? Yeah. Any spouses? Okay. Any brothers, sisters? You can stand. You can stand. Any brothers, sisters of veterans and service members? Any children? Any friends? Okay. So as you can tell, if we have to worry about, you know, if we're talking about public health issue, here we go. For every veteran, there is at least three people who are being affected by that person having been a veteran, whether that's in a good way or a bad way. My little son says, Papa doesn't get angry very often, but when he does, it's completely out of proportion. And he was about this tall when he said that. So let's see if I can get into this. I work for VVW Military and Veterans Counseling. I do the mental health for them. We serve veterans from all era. I also run the Soldiers Project Chicago that serves veteran service members and loved ones from after 9/11. And I do the volunteer counselor once a month for civilian veteran families.